Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
All right, buddy, let's get on the podcast. Let's just jump right in, if you're ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, could you explain your business to the listeners?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. And so my name is Corin Woodmass. I'm the founder and managing partner at thefbabroker.com. And we're a business brokerage that focuses exclusively on selling e-commerce businesses that have an Amazon sales channel.
That's super niche. And I love the business. That's why I brought you on. How did you get into it?
Sure. So I was working for prior to that, I was actually buying and selling. I was an investor myself, buying and selling online businesses. We built and sold an e-commerce business from scratch during that time as well. And after we sold that one, we rolled some of those profits into an FBA business. And about 6 to 12 months after launching that business, I started getting more and more into the brokerage space, first by helping friends and extended friends with buying and selling businesses, and then going to work for another brokerage that handled online businesses. And then I noticed a really big trend towards FBA specifically. And because I had an FBA business, I saw the opportunity. I left the brokerage I was with. I didn't immediately start the FBA broker. It started about 3 months after that. And so that was mid-2016. June 2016 is when we launched. And things have been going very well and compounding ever since then. So yeah, it was a good move to go super niche. I think there's a lot of space in the online business transaction world for more people to go niche in different niches, and even in our niche, there's we track all the market data for FBA related business sales, and we put out a report each month. And doing that, we looked at the whole market last year. We've run that for a year and a half, and in 2017, we actually saw 83 different brokers with listings in our space. So yeah, the market is huge.
That's amazing. How did you come up with the initial brand name? I know some people get stuck with that.
a mutual friend of ours and I were having a beer in a pub in Barcelona, and he actually convinced me to go super niche on the business, so I can't take full credit for that. And afterwards, I sent him, I think the next day, I sent a couple of names to our friend, and he responded saying, I don't like any of them, but I'd already bought the FBABroker.com, so I just rolled with it.
Oh, nice. What was your initial marketing like when you first got your foot in the door?
Sure. So I had a couple of advantages by going super niche. So the first one was anytime I was talking to someone, it helped me prepare more of a plan for the next person to talk to, because we're always talking about a similar business model. Well, it's the same business model, similar businesses, right? So it enabled me to put together a list of questions that I can use over and over again. And also it helps with, we do a lot of exit planning. So when I'm out there talking on podcasts or talking to people in person, I can really provide some value because I do this day in, day out, right? So that was the initial thing. When I started to value these businesses for potential clients, I realized that I had the ability to go niche with valuations as well as the marketing. So that's when we started researching the market and finding out how many businesses there were, what they were listed for, how long they took to sell. And we knew that would take some time to build traction. But actually that first report built a lot of our audience, because I shared it on some Facebook groups and people, what I actually did was I said, look, I put up a little video and a link to the report. And then under that link, I said, by the way, we'll be doing this every month. If you want to sign up and get this every month, just sign up here. And because it was an open loop, I guess, people were really interested. And I got a lot of feedback. I got some positive and negative feedback from people, but also just over 300 subscribers within 24 hours from doing that, which was pretty awesome.
Wow, that is really awesome. How has this newsletter evolved over the last, was it 2 years?
Yeah, a year and a half. Or just over. And what's been interesting, having a market pulse on something that you're super niche in, we now see month over month trends, year over year trends, annual trends, and a lot of it's matching with the buyers and sellers I'm talking to. So it's cool to see the wider market. So I'd highly recommend anyone with a market that they're doing sort of niche marketing to do something similar, just for their own benefit to keep a pulse on the market. You start to see some really interesting trends. For instance, right now, we can provide valuations for people based on 2017 sales across the board. So we break it down to category, size of the business. We've got a ton of valuation factors, all because we're keeping a pulse on the market.
Where do you see Amazon and FBA going? Everyone I speak to that I know in Amazon wants to sell and exit. So it's, you know, I don't know much about the industry as a whole since I'm not in it. So I would want to get your take on that.
Sure. I think in any business, once people become profitable, there's the temptation to sell because you've built up this business, you've taken some knocks, you've invested a lot of capital. An e-commerce or inventory-based business is capital intensive compared to the money that you can actually take out of the business. So that's one reason that people are looking to sell, is they build up to a point where they're making money and the multiples that businesses are trading for is attractive to them to take that money off the table, go and start another business or another FBA business in a new niche. That's one reason. Another reason is fear. So people, if they're just making income via Amazon, which the bulk of the people we talk to are, obviously with our marketing, that's actually a fear-based motive. But you talk to a lot of people that sell businesses, and it's the same across the board. You could have a 20, 30-year-old business, super diversified income, and you'd still be potentially selling because of fear of what's happening, what could happen in the future.
What would you say to someone getting into the game right now on Amazon?
It's interesting. So under $500,000, a lot of our buyers are actually brand new to Amazon. And that was interesting to me at first. And one of the reasons people are doing this is they're looking at the Amazon space and saying, okay, this is a good opportunity. People are making some money here. There's a lot of training out there to how to rank products, how to do the whole business, basically. And a lot of people are looking at that and then saying, well, I have more capital to deploy than just a few $1,000 to get started on a product line. Maybe I've got $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, and I want to get a better return on that. So I'd actually say if you're starting in Amazon right now and you're looking at selling via FBA, I'd look at how much capital you have, how much experience you have, and what your skill set is. So if you have, say, $50,000, $100,000 or more in capital ready to go, maybe look at buying so you're not starting from zero. If you don't have that much capital, I'd take a hard look at what it takes to make a business like this successful, because it's not a business for everyone. So if you know someone that's doing well in Amazon, just ask them what's their day-to-day look like and try and match that up to your skill set and what you want to do. So it's one thing to do something for the cash. It's another thing to create a successful ongoing business.
Interesting. Back to your business, how long was it until you seen traction? So from the day you started out until that first successful deal?
We got paid within 6 months from launch, and that put us on a six-figure revenue range in 6 months, which is pretty good.
And how did that continue afterwards? Did it grow? Did it stay still? Because I know you said it's exploding right now, but I just want to see if there were any ups and downs or only going up.
If you look at the trend, the brokerage business is high margin, but it's low volume, at least at first, right? And we were pretty picky with the type of businesses we list, and we vet pretty hard. So we make sure that businesses are quality for our buyers, because I see that long term as a bigger, that's more important than doing more deals in the first year and a half. So the income looks quite lumpy throughout the year. But as far as deal flow, the amount of deals we're listing and selling, it is increasing. It's increasing exponentially, actually, due to the fact that it takes time for people to get ready to sell. And I really focus, because of my background and my interest, on helping people prepare for the ideal sale for them. So it's not really about me. I was actually on a call just before we got on the phone, and I said to this seller, this might sound strange coming from a broker, but I always start from the position of not selling, and then throughout the course of the conversation, is this worth selling, or is this the right time to sell for you, and am I the right person to help you?
Right. What do you look for in a healthy business?
Sure. So there's a couple of things that would make it interesting. So growth is number one. The age of the business, how long the business has been around, the growth trend year over year is important. Net profit margin. So a good, healthy net profit margin, 20-30% plus, is great. A lower profit margin might actually be an opportunity. And the team as well. So who's actually running the business? So this call I was on earlier, the seller there has a whole team running this business and scaling, and they have systems, procedures. They have a lower profit margin because of that. But a buyer coming in, if they're new to the industry and they have the capital to buy this business, they'd be starting 10 steps ahead of anyone else. If they're a strategic buyer, they might want to acquire the team as well as the actual business. So that's something that's very interesting. Niches that are somewhat lower competition. It doesn't need to be no competition, of course, but passionate industries on the rise that aren't sort of fly by night. They're not hoverboards or anything like that, or finger spinners.
Right.
Something with more longevity are really good. Growing markets are the best. And that's the main things we look for.
How has your marketing changed since the beginning?
I think not just the marketing, but our whole approach has changed. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, it was pretty much just me, and I just wanted to get on the phone with people and help them sell their businesses. And now we've turned into a more professional brokerage, right? So the marketing sort of reflects that now, and also our process. So I find marketing a piece of the puzzle, but I also look at our marketing beyond just someone raising their hand to have a call. I look at it right through the process, right until the deal's done. So how can we improve each step of that process? Because, you get a client in that you help them sell their business, chances are very high that they'll go and talk to their friends and have them come talk to you as well, right? So yeah, that's how I look at that's what's evolved over time, is just focusing on the front end to focusing on each step of the process. And we're definitely not perfect, but now that I have that that thought in mind, I'm looking at each step in the chain.
Could you walk us through this process?
Sure. So a typical business, I'll talk sell side because that's the majority of what we do, sell side brokerage. Mm-hmm. So someone has an FBA business, they're making good money, they're thinking maybe it's maybe I could sell this for enough for me to walk away and do something else. And then they'll reach out to us. We have a scorecard that they fill in. Basically, it's some information about their business. I'll give them a valuation, but also some tips based on other businesses that have sold. So we can pair their business with other businesses that have sold and give them some tips on what they could do to increase their value. So if the valuation range that you get off the bat is interesting, then we'll set up a call and go through a process of digging deeper into the business, seeing if right now is a good time to sell, or if you could potentially rearrange some things, plan ahead for the exit. So if at that point, yes, it's a good time to sell, then we need to get into the numbers and actually see how much money the business is making. Once that's confirmed, then we do a vetting process. So we verify income, we verify expenses. That can take a little bit of back and forth, right?
Yeah.
And the next part is the marketing process. So we create a marketing package for the business, each business individually, because they're all different, of course. And then we go out to market. So with us, we have a huge list of pre-qualified, vetted buyers that are looking for specific types of businesses. So best case scenario, we find a buyer already that's looking for your type of business, and then we can connect the dots and help you get the best price based on the market data that we have. So we make sure that obviously we're incentivized to sell for the highest price possible, and then we go through and actually do the deal with you. So make sure that the deal structure is great and everything's handed over properly during the process.
On average, how long does a process take for each client, and what's an average valuation that you usually see?
Sure. So that really depends on the size of the business and the category. So I can, I've actually got some data in front of me that I can share with you. So let's talk net profit range. So not everyone's going to know the net profit, but this will give you a benchmark basically. So under $100,000, you're looking list price. So this is a net profit range of up to about 50,000. You're looking at a average multiple of just under 2. So it's 1.94 is what we've seen. And the biggest market right now is under $500,000. So in the 100 to 500,000 range, you could be making 50 to 180,000 in this range. Your multiple there would be 2.5. And the way it works is we work out your net profit, and then it's plus inventory at cost. So you'll get paid back for the inventory at cost on top of that. And obviously, the larger the business goes, the higher the multiple goes. And the main reason for this is it's a different type of buyer. If you're pulling in $1 million, $2 million net per annum, or EBITDA at that point, you're attracting a totally different buyer. And they're willing to pay more because everything else being equal, it's harder to build a business that big.
Very cool. When we spoke before, just on Facebook, we were talking about networking, and you said that it's the number one multiplier of your business. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting. I'm guilty of this too, but I speak to a lot of people at a conference we go to every October, and being a year since you see people, sometimes people are doing something completely different. Maybe someone's sold a business, maybe someone's invested in something and done really well. You know, things change in that amount of time. So what it shows me is that you need to keep in touch with people in your own network, let alone new people you meet, just to keep up to date with what people are doing. A lot of people won't know what you're doing, and that's not helpful. But more importantly, keeping up to date with what other people are doing in your network, you could help connect them with people. That creates opportunities for you to mention what you're working on. It's a good habit to get into. So, yeah, whenever I have a formulated follow-up system, even with my own network of friends and extended friends, that the return on that is huge. So it's something that's worth looking into, and it's often something you overlook, because when you think networking, oftentimes you think people you don't know. So going to a networking event, I don't know if you've ever been to one of those business networking things where you're forced to give leads and stuff.
Yeah.
it's super awkward for everyone, isn't it?
Well, the first few times I went, like my buddy took me, and he was in life insurance, so you can imagine. And yeah, it was mostly business coaches, real estate agents, and life insurance agents, and you know, it wasn't very diversified. So it was even more awkward than I think you can imagine. But yeah, I don't really count that as networking. That was just, it was sad. Do you have any tips or strategies for maintaining a network? Because you know, that's the one thing I struggle with myself. Like at this moment, I have three different podcasts, right, and a lot of guests, and just keeping up with them, it seems like I'm not doing a good job, because you're right, you know, going back to your same network is super valuable, but I just haven't developed like a solid plan on doing that.
Yeah, so I have a network of close friends that I keep in touch with almost automatically every month. And I really need to formalize this, but I'll give you my theory on how to do this. And we could brainstorm how to actually implement this.
Okay.
So I've done this a number of times where I've gone to Facebook, I've gone to my friends list, and I've written down anyone that's, so this is business networking,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. So I've gone through my list of all of my Facebook friends, and I've noted down who's in business, and I'll note down what they're doing, and can I help them with something? And then I'll just hit them up and say, hey, Tom, haven't spoken to you in a while. Let's jump on a call next week, or something like this, right? So I think that's the critical thing, is when you're thinking about maintaining your network, is thinking about the other person and making it all about them. Because anyone in the world will get on a call with you if you just want to talk about them. And right, the hard part when you're following up with someone is actually talking about them. But that's the critical thing. We all want to talk about ourselves. So talk to the person about them. What are you up to? What's happening? What are you excited about? I love these questions. Here's a couple of questions I always ask. I ask, what are you excited about right now? And that's actually my favorite. And who else should I talk to? Right at the end of the call, who else should I talk to? Because that opens up opportunities for them to introduce you to people. But the most of that focus on those calls is about that person and what they need. I've often done this where I've gone on a process of reaching out to people and connecting people with each other. So if you do a couple of, like one call a day, let's say, within a week or two, you'll be able to connect people with each other that can help each other out. They just don't, they may even know each other, they just don't know the problem. So if you focus on it that way, that's the best way to focus on the outreach or following up with people. And then what you'll see happen is the reverse. So people will ask you what you're up to. I'm doing this brokerage now, blah, blah, blah. And then they may talk to someone and then they'll refer someone to you. But yeah, that's a compounded effect. So other than that, just reaching out to people randomly, even with a Facebook message, like we do, right?
Yeah.
Just now and then we'll just message each other. That's a great way just to keep in touch with people.
And I tried doing that, but actually you pulled that one on me. That what are you excited about? I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite questions.
Yeah, but this wasn't you reaching out. Like I reached out and all of a sudden I'm getting like, what are you excited about? I'm like, well, hold on a second. So it must be really automatic. Yeah, the one thing I struggle with, so when I'm getting new guests for these podcasts, right? So the new one I'm starting is a crypto podcast, right? And there's a lot of influencers that I'm getting on. And then at the same time, when I look at my list already, it's like 800 or 900 people, probably 150 have been on podcasts. Just the time in a day runs out, right? Like it's like, when do I work? When do I reach out to new people? When do I reach out to the old ones? You know, that's the only thing that really, I guess, keeps me from doing it. Because, you know, if I asked 20 people a week to to get on a call with me just to find out what they're doing, that's pretty much half the week taken, and I'm not even sure if I put a dent in my network, you know. But I definitely don't do much work then. That's where my challenge is with it.
I read a book a while ago. I'll have to follow up with you with what it was called. Maybe it was called Power Connector, mm-hmm. or something. I heard an interview with this lady and then read her book after, and she has a rule where it's, I think it's 5, 50, 100.
Yeah.
Or it might be something similar. So she groups people in her network into a category. So obviously the five people are the closest in your network, and then you've got maybe even 20 and 50 and 100. So you group people by how close they are to you, and also how close they are to where you want to get to. So you're still focusing on them when you're reaching out, but for now you can think about yourself, right? Yeah. So then you say, these 50 people I need to keep in touch with every week, or these 50 people I need to follow up with every month, and these 100 people I can follow up with every quarter. So if you break people down, so at least you can see it visually, it might make it easier. And it also depends on what you're doing next. So if this crypto thing, the crypto podcast, is the most important thing that you're doing next, obviously the people you should keep in touch with the most are people in the crypto space, if that's what you're focused on.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I'll try to kind of map that out. But let me know if you find out that interview. I would definitely link it underneath the podcast.
Yeah, sure. It was on I Love Marketing. So,
Okay.
I'll find it and shoot it to you after.
Very cool. Corin, if people want to reach out to you, where should they go?
Sure. So my main website is thefbabroker.com, and my email is Corin, Coran, at thefbabroker.com. And if you're just interested in seeing our price guide that we put out each month, and also getting a Monday email from us about all the deals that have listed and closed in the marketplace, go to fbabusinesspriceguide.com.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.